So that was a tough one, not the game that Hawkeye Nation wanted to see. This is an interesting episode because there's not a lot of breakdown, not a lot of recap of the actual events, plays, drives that happened in the game. It's more philosophical on us just having a conversation, trying to figure out how do we compete in these games again, if at all, and how does NIL play a role? This one was a little bit different. Let's have a day. Let's go.
Gotta go see Banana Ball.
But like, you realize you catch a bananas game, and I'm like, what is that? He's like, oh, this they're like the next hottest thing. Welcome into the podcast, everybody. Here for another recap of some Hawkeye football. I know, not the game that a lot of you wanted to see. We'll get to that in a second. We have Grant here. We have Kevin. Both of them look chipper, energized, ready to talk ball. And Grant, you're repping the Broncos. Congrats to them on, at least for now, I think they're holding a lead against the Raiders. Is that game closing?
That game is over.
It is over?
Absolutely dominated, destroyed the Raiders, finally got the monkey off our back. We hadn't beat the Raiders in forever. Good to beat them today in the best uniforms in the NFL, might I add, out there. Look at the orange crush. Look how gorgeous those blue helmets sit on top of the orange jerseys.
The blue
This is the 90s look.
I think it's 70s. They put in I believe who they put in for in the Ring of Honor today is from the 77 team. So
wow,
but I think they wore the jerseys for a very long time. I don't know when specifically this jersey started and ended.
I'll tell you this: it's a good look. It's a clean look.
It's a fantastic.
I feel like the Broncos have always had like a top five jersey in the league, though.
I like it. Yeah, I like it a lot. This here is Gardner Minshew under pressure. And your very own Hawkeye cornerback in the NFL. The only white one, by the way, Riley Moss with his first NFL interception.
Minshew down the sideline. Jump ball, and it's Riley Moss with the interception for the Broncos.
And he was so excited, and he's obviously, why wouldn't you?
What do the Eagles have Coop listed at then?
I believe he's their nickel, and he's a backup nickel.
Okay.
I say he's on unfortunate punt return punching bag, it looks like, from last week.
Dude, if I'm Coop, I'm asking for a trade 3 games in after that.
We will accept him at the Broncos.
Will you?
We will welcome him with open arms.
I love when anybody does anything good in college football. Grant, you tweet at them, and we'll just say Kevin Ward is the player, and you just go, Kevin Ward, you are a Denver Bronco.
Well, here's the idea. I'm not a GM. No one's contacted me to be a GM yet. But my simple strategy would be you can't have good players like do the cool plays again. Like a guy like Ryan Williams, he can't do Ryan Williams stuff against you if he's on your team. So if you just got to hoard him, right? Be like, we don't let anyone know how good this Devontae Ross guy is, right? We just hide him on our bench. He's our secret. Right, so we're gonna unleash him soon.
So you're telling. Hold on a second, Grant. This is groundbreaking stuff. You're telling me that if you did happen to become a GM of an NFL team someday, which is not out of the question at this point. Let's just be honest. Your strategy would to be to get as many good players on your team as possible.
No. You're misinterpreting. Of course, duh. Right. No. We want to hoard players.
Right. You just want to find all these players and put them on your practice squad.
So like how many receivers like get drafted a year? How many?
Horrible person to ask, but a lot.
That's in the neighborhood of
50.
Maybe not quite, but ballpark
40.
What if we just used all of our? We just took all the receivers.
What if we just got all of them?
Yeah. What if we just owned one position? We took all the receivers.
You would just created a monopoly amongst an entire position group.
I mean, you know, that's a strategy that sometimes works in fantasy, and then you trade like some really good receivers for a good quarterback.
You got instant competition in practice. Whoever doesn't make it, you trade other teams, and then you acquire what else you need.
Okay. Well, there is that. Yeah. The difference between fantasy and real life is you have to keep those guys happy. And generally that means they want to score touchdowns. So only so many guys can score, but I like it, Grant. I like the aggressiveness. I like where you're going. And I like that you're repping your Broncos on a Sunday where they got a win. Congratulations to you and Bronco Nation. Bronco Country? Is that what it is?
It's Broncos Country. Yeah.
Okay.
You can say Broncos Country. Sure.
Let's ride or not anymore.
We can still ride.
Okay. Cool. I told the story about how we met Russ in Vegas, right?
You did.
Okay. Yeah. Crazy. Kevin, how are you doing on this Sunday?
I'm doing pretty good. Doing pretty good. I was nursing a little bit of a hangover this morning, but we're doing all right now.
I thought that was going a different direction. I thought you were going to say like a hamstring or something, or like you had, tweaked an ankle on a run or something. A hangover.
Yeah. So
you had a couple pops, huh? You still get down at 30 years old.
Hey, I am 29. All right. I'm not old like you and Drake and Ike. And
that's it.
That's it. Okay. My wife. hope she doesn't listen to this one. No, I'm still a thriving young 29 year old. And right. We went out to the Atlanta Colonies Oktoberfest this weekend and downed a few pops out there.
The Atlanta Colonies is a good time.
Yeah, so this is the first Oktoberfest that I've been to out there. I've been meaning to do it for like the last several years, but we finally got a chance to, and it was fun. It was good. Really fun.
I'm glad you had a good time.
Yeah,
glad you got to enjoy yourself. Maybe got to drink. The pops helped you maybe numb some of the what happened during the 2:30 kickoff against the Ohio State Buckeyes yesterday. We will talk about that in a second. I do really quickly, Grant, if you could pull up the awards winners, just want to roll through those. Really tough day for your guy. And I don't even really have a lot to say. We just had, Missouri turns out they're a fraud. And Grant or Kevin maybe tried to tell me that. Maybe Texas A&M is better than we thought. Iowa. You might be able to say Iowa's a fraud if we're going to talk about competing against top five, top 10 teams in the country. That's sort of been the trend the last 3 years. And then JMU, I'm sad. I'm sad, boys. Not only did they not cover, they didn't win. They didn't even win.
Yep, they got beat Louisiana Monroe.
Yeah, so they're out of playoff discussion.
The Warhawks, sneaky, General Booty.
Yeah. Just can't go against them. Won't go against them the rest of the year. Your boy goes 0-3, and I am now under 500 for the year. We need a huge bounce back week this week, and trust me, I'm coming. I'm bringing Louie, and I'm bringing more than three picks this week. We'll just say that.
The awards winners is going to be like a 35-minute segment now.
It's going to be half the show. It's going to
become its own podcast at some point.
It probably deserves its own podcast. Kevin, how'd you do?
Not great. So we had Clemson minus 14. I think that line skyrocketed up to like 17 by the end of the week. They won by 16, I think.
Mm.
You got it, right?
Yeah, no, I got it, but yeah. It depends on where everyone else got it. They won by 16 points.
Yeah.
Florida State is in a bad state as a program at 1-5.
Bad.
Did you see the graphic that they threw up in the beginning of the game? It was like a win means it was like restoring any and all hope for the FSU program.
Oh my God.
It's like horrible. Clemson, win means staying in playoff contention. Florida State, just maybe a single smile.
That was what the broadcast put up?
Yes.
That's amazing. That's incredible.
it's bleaked out there in Tallahassee.
Could you imagine if the broadcast team got real funny and they put up like Clemson stays in playoff contention, Florida State, maybe their fans won't kill themselves after this week.
The graphic just said, what's at stake? Florida State with a win restores hope and respect.
Oh God. I mean,
could you imagine the state of the podcast in the state of Iowa fans right now if we were rolling into Washington week at 1-4 or whatever?
Oh God, it would, dude, the state of the fans from, I mean, and I understand it's Twitter, it's not real life, but you get on social media, this will be part of tonight's show as well, addressing some of the narratives online, at least throughout the vocal minority fan base that likes to bitch and moan. You'd think that we were 1-5 right now anyway. We're as good as 1-5 in some fans' eyes. But yeah, if we were legitimately 1-5 and we had won like versus Illinois State and then gone 0-4 in the last four games, there might be fires. I mean, yeah, it could be bad.
Well, I mean, this is a team that was preseason ranked number 10.
Yeah. And you know what my favorite stat is they always have, I think for like some amount of years running, like a really good amount, like 12 or 14 or something years running, there's at least one team that starts in the AP top 25 that finishes the season unranked.
Top 25, I mean, that's not saying much.
No. The top 10. Top 10. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the top 10 of the AP 25, top 25, that finishes the season unranked. And it's really fun to go back through.
And kind of, do we just get a squeaker out of you?
I don't know what's happening. I have like a bubble in my throat. I'm dying.
Time out. You got this.
Yeah, hold on.
No, I was about to say, you said, yeah, whatever. Go ahead.
It's just fun to go back and see those teams that they just turn into dog shit. They're like, oh.
I feel like it's Notre Dame half the time.
Well, and Grant and I have had this discussion. We don't need to shit on Notre Dame anymore, but it is often.
We can. I mean, I got.
I mean, Greg.
Grant's got time. He's got notes.
It's actually funny you brought that up because I prepared a little. No,
let me bring out my Notre Dame notebook. Let's go back to 2007.
Florida State, though, is funny, particularly this year, because ever since they got left out of the playoff, and I agree that they got robbed. I thought that was ridiculous.
Absolutely robbed last year.
I don't know if any program has had a worse time than Florida State. Like,
because they got absolutely.
They got destroyed by Georgia.
Destroyed by Georgia in the bowl game. And then they're 1-5 this year.
Yeah. It's just, and then also they're suing the ACC because they're apparently were too good for the ACC. Mm. And then now they're 1-5.
Interesting.
Just an interesting.
Yeah, tell me, I mean, is the SEC going to take them now at this point? Like,
I don't know what's going to happen with them. I'm going to be totally honest.
Speaking of teams taking action, did you guys see at all, like last week, we kind of slipped under the radar and I didn't mention anything on it. I had it in my notes, but it didn't come up in the show. After Nebraska lost that Illinois Friday night game, did you see that Nebraska sent something to the Big Ten or like came out with a statement that they no longer want to host or want to play on Friday nights? They do not. They do not want to play football on Friday nights anymore. And
have they played two games on Friday nights?
Such a bad look. It was like after the night after or the morning after they lose, they're like, okay, but we don't want to do that anymore. Like with Fridays, we're not about it. We don't like that. It was so bitch. Like,
I mean, I'm not a huge fan of the college football Friday night games, to be honest with you. Especially if like you have to burn one of your home games like that. I'm okay watching the Hawks play away games on Friday night.
Right.
But I don't know. I feel like you don't get the full home game experience when you have a Friday night game. So
this is straight from ESPN. Nebraska AD requests no more Friday games except Black Friday. Okay, so they did save Black Friday.
But isn't this the last one anyway?
I believe this is the last Black Friday game for Nebraska and Iowa.
Interesting.
All right, circling all the way back to the second pick I had. We had a rough week picking. Otherwise, we had Tennessee minus 13. They lose outright. USC minus 8. They lose outright.
Man.
Tough week, but 1-2. We'll bounce back next week.
Grant?
We went 7-3.
Wow.
Which is pretty good considering we were 0-2 before Saturday even started. Because UTEP disaster on Thursday. I don't know if anyone was paying attention, but in front of the tens of fans that were watching that, it was not good. UNLV got absolutely robbed on Friday night by the officiating. I still don't understand targeting or roughing the passer, but they got absolutely screwed and everyone knows it. But regardless, Cal at like 2 in the morning blew a 25, I think, point lead to Miami. Like they had him on the brink of upset. It was going to be fantastic. They covered anyway, but they should have won.
Game day,
the Calgarhythm showed out. It was awesome. Minnesota won outright. Washington beat Michigan and the over hit right at the end. Needed a field goal so bad. Got it anyway. And then A&M just absolutely destroyed Missouri. I don't know if I was like – I think I was correct about Missouri being a little bit overrated, but I still think – I don't think A&M is that much better than them regardless. Okay. And then Texas Tech beat Arizona, and South Carolina looked – awful against Ole Miss, so that was not a very good pick. But hey, I'll take 7-3, sticking above 500. So
Gary's looking good, 24-19-1. Just so many games. Just cannot wait for that to be 70 something and 60.
I got to pick a lot more games.
Accuracy by volume, baby.
If we turn this into its own show, we can all do like 40 picks. It could be like Portnoy and their show when they come up with like 18.
So I don't think I can though, because I only feel. I rarely feel good about more than five picks.
I don't ever feel
like some weeks I don't even feel good about three. I really only want to give two or one, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I feel you. I understand. After going 0-3, I don't think I feel good about anything anymore. So, you know what I do want to do though, is I want to tell you guys a story to kind of to segue us into the topic of tonight's podcast. Let's take it back to circa 2006. Okay. Grant, you're hardly alive at this point. And
it's probably four.
Yeah. And
probably.
Well, it depends on the month, but
it's summer. It's summer.
I'm four. Okay.
It's spring, early summer. And Kevin and I, as the elders of this podcast, we just got done with our what would have been fifth grade year. Great year for me, by the way. Had Mrs. O'Neill. Was the last fifth grade class at Fisher Elementary before they moved the fifth grade into a intermediate building with sixth graders the following year. And I still played baseball at this time. Now, this story actually involves more than just one occupant of the Benton house, because this story involves John Wiz as well. John Wiz, a resident of the Des Moines area. And in summer in Iowa, kids play baseball. And it's time for AAU baseball. I'm the catcher on our team, Marshalltown. We had a solid squad. Okay. We had a really solid group of guys. I could name them down the list. Doesn't matter. Not contextual to the story. But they were good. They were good dudes. We could hit the ball. We had a couple good pitchers for a out of the area Des Moines team. We could play, right? We could play with a Johnston or a Valley. Anybody who's central to Des Moines or Iowa knows the Des Moines schools. They're probably going to be able to beat Mason City, beat Fort Dodge, beat Marshalltown. That's how it goes. In sixth grade, there were two state tournaments for AAU baseball teams. There were school teams, and then there was what was just called the AAU state tournament. We played in both, and we absolutely dominated in the sixth grade school team state tournament. Marshalltown Bobcats 2006 school tournament champions. I had a two home run game in the championship. That doesn't matter. What does is then a couple weeks later, we played in the AAU state championship. Now, this
same,
is where
same exact team.
Same exact team. We're a team of nine, I think 10 Marshalltown kids and one kid from East Marshall, which is a 2A school, Kevin. And he was fast. He hit like ninth, whatever. We're basically a full Marshalltown team. We entered the AAU state tournament. And we could play with a bunch of the select schools around the area, right? An all Iowa team. They go around, they pick the best guys from each school. Let's go get the most highly developed sixth graders out there. And we made a run to the AAU state championship as just your little old Marshalltown kids. And we met ourselves the opponent named the Iowa Cubs in the championship.
Like the AAA affiliate?
Just like the AAA affiliate. And you want to know why they were called the Iowa Cubs? It's because one of the kids on the team and the financial backer of the team was a part of the Iowa Cubs, the real Iowa Cubs staff. These kids were from all around the Des Moines area. Valley, Johnston, Dowling, John Wiz was one of them. And they were the best of the best. A select team. True select team. And we could compete with damn near anyone, even the select schools that we would go up against. But when we got onto the diamond with the Iowa Cubs, Kevin and Grant, we didn't stand a fucking chance. There was nothing that was going to happen that day in the sixth grade AAU state tournament that was going to make the Marshalltown Bobcats win that game. John Wiz was on the mound. And in sixth grade, this man, John Wiz, threw 77 miles an hour. I swear to God, I think he was actually clocked in the low to mid 70s in sixth grade.
It's a great name for a baseball pitcher.
John Wiz. Well, his last name's Wisniewski, but they called him John Wiz. They had a lefty, Brock Everett, went to Valley. When he threw the ball, you could hear it burn through the air. At least this is how my memory is of when I was in sixth grade.
There were flames coming off of the baseball.
In seven innings against the Iowa Cubs, we made contact with the ball. We made contact with the ball twice. I foul ticked it once, and our worst player got a single on them in like some random inning. Didn't matter. No one else could do a single thing.
Hey, it's Peter Harmon, the food guru, here to talk about Gray's Gourmet To Go. At Gray's Gourmet To Go, we are madly and passionately in love with three things: chicken lips, pizza, and great food to go. We believe you want to feed your family something great at home, but you're too busy with life to stop and cook. That's why we built Gray's Gourmet To Go. So the next time you need to feed the gang and you don't feel like cooking, just come to graysgourmettogo.com.
This is Leah Pesha, and I've been saying, hit a deer, call Premier, for years. But it's time for something new. It's still where you need to go for deer divots and door dings, as well as damaged dashboards. That's what my dad Nathan's driving at and dreams about. Why not say, when your car is dinged, be a deer and call Premier? I think Dad's going to love that. Premier Automotive, North Liberty's premier auto body repair shop.
Be a deer and call Premier Auto Body in North Liberty.
It was the most embarrassing baseball game that we've ever played. We got absolutely dominated. We had zero chance. And I tell you guys the story. I set the table here with this because it kind of felt like I got a little bit of a flashback. There was a little nostalgia when I watched this Ohio State game. And what really did it for me, and I didn't know this going in to this weekend, but when the announcer said that they spent over $20 million on this roster, well, that Iowa plus 20 pick that I had on Ward's winners started to feel a lot worse. I actually thought, I don't like that pick anymore. I don't like it at all. Because I know that Iowa didn't spend $20 million. I don't think we spent $2 million. And this is sort of a adjacent discussion to competing with the top teams in the Big Ten, competing with an Ohio State, or nationally with a Georgia or an Alabama. But this is the sort of feeling that I got watching this weekend. When I watched their freshman receiver just totally sun Deshaun Lee, I believe it was, and one hand a touchdown after having like a 40 or 50 yard catch on the play before, I thought, I don't know if this is fair. And I go back and forth because part of me thinks if we hit the field goal in the first half, which is one of several mistakes that you cannot make against the top five team if you're going to stay anywhere close, and or Cade finds Weechen on that weird sort of broken play and like something crazy happens, which it easily could have, and he scores on that, we're somehow up 10-7 at half, which is exactly where you want them. You couldn't ask for anything better. So I'm not saying you can't beat these teams. I'm not saying that the money that teams are able to spend nowadays absolutely 100% closes the door to ever competing with a top five team. But I am starting to reconsider, at least within my own head, what the expectations should be, at least in the current state of NIL. Because that roster and the 11 guys that we had against them, even with our great defense, we are vastly outmatched. Just, it is not even close in some areas. And that was shown the other day. And I hope you guys liked that story. I hope you guys liked the little baseball references there. We probably could have competed with the White Sox back in sixth grade.
That was a little low. That was unnecessary. You got a White Sox fan on this show.
It was valid.
But I don't know. How did you guys feel about the game? What feeling did you leave that game with? Did it take you back to sixth grade?
No.
Okay.
Did not go back to sixth grade. No, it felt a lot like the trend we've been seeing against a lot of these top-rated opponents we've played in the last few years. Like, we stick around for a little bit. Defense is more or less doing their job, and then eventually we just can't keep up with them in the race anymore. Yeah. And we have to drop back, you know? I didn't watch it in real time. I recorded it and I kind of breezed through it, later in the day.
Oh, good for you. That's the
yeah. I didn't check my phone, didn't check text messages, didn't check score. So I had no idea what was happening. But I don't know. It's harder to get a feel for the game when you're kind of breezing through it like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, for like, sure.
You know, play happens, fast forward 20 seconds, play happens, fast forward 20 seconds. You don't really get as good of a feel for the game. Sometimes you're just outmatched.
Yeah. Yeah. I put up one tweet, one like original tweet during the game. I had a lot of responses. I had a lot. I had time, as they say. So I had a lot of like fun conversation responses to a lot of the responses that I got. But my tweet was to the timeout that they took before the fake punt that actually ended up working. We'll get to that in a second. And somebody, you know, this was actually one of the cordial like back and forth that where someone was like, yeah, I understand your point. And the last thing he said was just like, man, it just felt like really demoralizing that we couldn't do anything against this team. And my only response was sometimes, maybe more often than not, it's going to be demoralizing when you play a top five team that spent $20 million on their roster. Like that's, I'm sorry, but that's just sort of the plate we were served this weekend. Like there's no way to just not totally, you know, block yourself from the possibility that that is what happens. And as a former player, I know Drake used to talk about this, and Kevin, you've talked about it before as well. You're never throwing in the towel. You're never waving the white flag. You're not going into a game thinking, oh, we're screwed here. There's no way we can win this thing. But it is what it is. You're sitting there in the fourth quarter, and especially as a fan who's a little bit more detached from the actual game, you're sitting there going, well, we didn't have a chance. There's nothing we could have done here. And that's not totally true. But man, that thing got away in the third quarter fast. And you watch how an explosive team who can pretty much move the ball at will on, you know, Iowa's still one of the best defenses in the country coming out of this weekend. That doesn't change things, right? We had two great turnovers that Castro and Higgins created. We had a lot of good stuff happen in that game defensively before we didn't. But I mean, things happen fast. And that actually takes me to another point as far as philosophy against playing these teams, where a lot of people, and we'll get there in a second. I don't want to just completely run back through this whole game, because a lot of people they tune into these things and they're like, I don't want to rehash getting beat 35-0, you know, drive by drive. I do want to start by saying, Kev, that, you know, we talked about three things the other day. And those three things were turnovers. I can't even remember the other two things at this point. What were the other two things we talked about? Turnovers, penalties, and our best players playing our best. And I think we said, like, we had to win the turnover battle by at least two, probably three. We lost it by one. And it was costly, costly. Turnovers are a very, very big factor in.
Did they get two touchdowns off our turnovers, or three?
At least two.
I think they got at least two. I mean,
they had the one that Cade fumbled the first play of a drive on our like 15 or 20,
mm-hmm.
and that was one of them. And then the pick that got tipped that was going to Reese, where I think if it doesn't get tipped, it's actually a pass interference, maybe. Because that guy threw Reese by him. It did get tipped at the line. Wow, he picks that.
He fell down.
Well, yeah, that could be the case too. I don't know. That guy took it back, like, I don't know, to our 30 or 20. I'm pretty sure they scored immediately after that. So that's at least two. And then there was another fumble where Cade tried to. I don't even remember what the other turnover was, to be honest. It was nice because we were getting our asses beat so bad kind of by the end of the third quarter there that I was on my way to a week late birthday dinner with the wife. Went to a new restaurant here in Des Moines, and I was like, cool, I can just put my phone away because there's nothing more for me here. And then we walk into the restaurant, and of course, what do they have on the TV? It's the Ohio State game. So I could not escape it. I watched without sound, sort of sparingly, the fourth quarter. Tough one. You don't win the turnover battle. Great pick by Castro. Great effort play by Higgins on the fumble that he punched out.
Phenomenal play.
Unbelievable play.
That's a first rounder play right there.
especially when you give up the tackle on the play previous. He was pissed probably, and then he went and redeemed himself. And the Castro play is just a good play. And he made a couple other nice tackles in the game as well. But I'm not even here for anybody listening tonight to give you answers because I don't have them.
I mean, is there anything systemic about the turnover issue? Like us turning the ball over three times or like, I don't know. Cause like going back,
systemic, are you talking about the picture at large here?
Yeah. Yeah. Is there a pattern of us turning the ball over that, or is there
against the ranked teams, you mean?
Yeah. I guess, I don't know.
I'd have to go back and look. I can see you kind of grasping it. Like you're trying to figure out why we haven't been able to compete. You're asking the same question. You're posing the same question to yourself that every fan is posing on social media in a different way. You're at least asking questions. They're just.
So, I mean, I go back to the Minnesota game. We win turnover batter 2-0. Iowa State, we lose 2-1. You know, the other two games, whatever. I'm just trying to think, like, where do we get to a spot where we compete with these teams that we're not?
Yeah. Here's what I think.
Like, so uber dependent on winning turnover battles. Like,
yeah.
It's a huge stat, but at the same time, like, you can't live and die by it because.
No, you would hope.
Half the time you win turnover battles, it's like the other team made a mistake that you're just there to capitalize on.
Right.
Sometimes, you know, the good teams don't make mistakes, right? Like, Jay Higgins forced a turnover.
Yeah.
Will Howard made an inadvisable pass that Sebastian Castro made a play on. So,
right. I think that, and there's a lot of, and I'm not saying that I didn't expect this or this surprises me, but it is amazing how quick things turn when emotion, and I don't know, maybe alcohol or whatever, and social media mix, right? Everybody knew last week, like this time last week, Monday, we're going into Ohio State week. Y'all listen to all the podcasts, right? Yeah. You know what they were ranked and what we were ranked. All the hype, right? The spread said 3 touchdowns. Like, we knew that this was
probably. I mean, no, yeah, exactly. It's like.
And then it happens.
Shouldn't be that surprised by it, right?
Like, that's what I'm saying. And then it happens. And when it's actually happening in real time, people still melt down. Like they expected something different.
Well, I mean, you always expect your team to compete and play well, right? I mean,
and I think we did that for half.
I mean, speaking as a White Sox fan, it's pretty miserable when you expect your team to lose going into every single game. I guess football's a little different though, but same time.
Well, but I would argue that we did compete for the first half, Kev.
We did. We totally did. Yes, guys were playing hard. Maybe it's just that when you see that. It's always like you see where you can win those games, right? You always see like, oh, we did this, we did that, we did this, we were in that game or something like that. Or, you know, like we've had those experiences like 2016 beating Michigan, 2017 beating Ohio State, you know, beating Penn State in 08 and 09. Like, you know, Hawkeye fans have memories of those games of beating those top five opponents, right?
Right. And they take a lot of pride.
And even when we haven't won those games, we've been pretty competitive until like the last 3 years.
2022, 2023, and 2024. Yeah. So here's my theory on this. And it's not real. It's not like a real clean cut theory. And I already babble and explain shit poorly anyway. So just hang in there on this with me. But I think a large part of our algorithm to either coming up with upsets in those games or at least playing close. I'm trying to think of a game where we didn't win, but we played close with like a top. Well, I mean, Ohio State 2013, you know, I think we lost by 10. It was like 31.
Yeah, we were winning at halftime. I mean, that was a very talented Ohio State team. Braxton Miller.
I think it was 14-10 at half and we lost 31-21, right? Like
something along those lines. Yeah.
We were not. And I think the spread was probably similar that day. Right. But we over delivered on what people thought. Like we kept that thing a game. We were up at half. How do we at least get back to there? And I think the thing about it is our offense, which, and this goes to show how truly bad the offense was the last 2 years, because while it has improved drastically, and even yesterday, you see a few drives there, a few plays. We even had a couple like 15, 20-yard passes down the middle, Lachey, one to Gill. You're like, oh my God, we have not seen any of this in 2 years. Like, I like what Lester's doing. I think everybody should like what Lester's doing right now. It is still not good enough to where when you're playing a top five team, like we're talking top five caliber, and when you go back to look at the teams that we've lost to, we got absolutely shell-shocked by this Ohio State outfit in 22.
Yep.
It was in the shoe.
We scored the – Joe Evans had a strip sack fumble, yep, and then it was like 52 straight points for Ohio State.
That team lost to Michigan in the Big Ten Championship but was a CFP team. The year prior to that in the Big Ten Championship that you and I attended, Kevin, that was a Michigan team that I believe was a CFP team.
They were
2021 Michigan. Yep. Yeah.
So we're talking those two teams,
Georgia in the playoffs, I think.
Yeah. Those two teams are top four teams in the entire country at the end of the year, mm-hmm, right? After a whole season of proving it. And then what was the other one? Penn State last year was not at the top caliber. And that one was really unfortunate, but again, I don't want to get too nuanced here, but if you go look at that, we lose Cade, Deacon comes in, like we're so depleted offensively. We're in such a bad spot that the defense is there. The offense was so bad that there was just nothing to punch back with. In the past, we've had at least a 60th, 70th, 80th ranked offense to punch back with, and that is just barely enough to, when it's close, you can sort of punch a little bit above your weight and make the other team tight. We don't have enough for other teams to really play tight. They're just, it's so depleted. And so I think that's the answer is just like, yeah, our offense has just been so abnormally bad, even though Iowa hasn't been an offensive juggernaut over the past, you know, going back to our time. Like, I think we were still ranked in the 50s in 2015 or something like that. Like, we had enough.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
great defense and okay offense.
CJ, Nate Stanley don't get nearly enough credit as they got during their time.
No, I think people are appreciating them more and more every day.
Yeah.
And we just have not had enough, because as great as our defense can be, and you basically saw what that looks like yesterday or Saturday as you listen to this on Monday or during the week sometime, like when you have a great defense, you can hang in there. You can, you know, like they scored on us first drive, unbelievable, like 16 play drive. But hey, it takes off a ton of clock. You're getting into a spot where if you can go just back and forth with them a little bit, if we kick a field goal, if we make that field goal, which is one of the mistakes that we talked about, you cannot miss that field goal. You cannot blunder that fake punt situation that we did. You cannot the turnovers. You can't make those turnovers in this kind of game. There's just no margin for error for those things. If we have any sort of offense, that's when, you know, Akram can scare Michigan a little bit, right? He can do some things that, like, oh God, they actually have to, but we just don't have that right now. We're year one of an offensive coordinator. People are calling for Kirk's head, and they're like, why can't we beat the – they're not even following their own logic that they've been using to complain the last couple of years. They're like, why can't we beat the good teams? It's like, okay, well, it's probably the offense. Yeah, we gave up 35 points, but if we have any sort of offense to help fight back in this game, it doesn't get to that disparity.
Yeah.
Okay, so then we look at the offense. Well, you're in year one of an OC. Okay, so was it the OC? Maybe. Like, Brian proved to be not a great offensive coordinator. We finally moved on from him. That could be the answer. And we just happened to play Ohio State this year, who's potentially the CFP best team. So that doesn't make you feel any better. None of that is like a moral victory. But, and I know no one wants to hear, well, you have to wait longer. But like, you're in year one of an offensive coordinator change, and a guy who's also now the quarterback's coach. So he's got a lot of he's got a lot of hands on the puppets of this offense now. And we might just have to wait, you know, to be able to play with the big boys. Because if you look at the offense, it is different. It's better. And we're doing
it's,
things
it's better, but we've also talked about, you know, how we've been a young, inexperienced, undeveloped from a player standpoint.
Sure.
The last couple of years, we finally have a veteran offensive line, you know. Yeah. We
that
have,
certainly helps.
Yeah, exactly. We have a running back who is playing well above what we expected prior to the year.
Yeah.
You can't promise that those things are going to be back next year.
No, and I think a lot of people actually think that they won't be back next year. I think a lot of people are very worried looking at next year, which I think is pointless. Like, we worry about this year, and you let the team and the staff like reload the gun, and we'll worry about that when it comes. But
no, I mean, you're not wrong, but at the same time,
you're saying in the context of, hey, we need to wait another year for this offense.
Exactly.
To
like, it's not like, oh, you're in the year three of a rebuild. It's like, sure. Next year's our year, man.
Yeah. We're Scott Frost era now. Exactly. I get it. I get it. And that's, you know, that is the reality is with this whole COVID thing, and we've got all these 6 years, and we happen to bring Tim Lester in at this specific time. Yeah. Year two might not be as big of a step as we'd like, after a full year in the program, because of how much we lose personnel wise, who knows?
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't have answers for you. I didn't watch the game all that closely, like I said, but one of the things that sticks out to me is that we went 15 of 21 throwing the ball, which is a good percentage.
It's not bad.
Only 110 yards.
Right.
5.2 yards per pass is bad.
And this is a pattern. And I actually, here's where maybe the fans just cream their pants when they hear this. And I have nothing against Cade. I actually I think his completion percentage is like almost 65% right now on the year. I think percentage wise, Cade has been like pretty good, pretty much what we would ask for. The issue is, well, one, the issue is if he's going to turn it over like he did on Saturday, no, I can't have that, buddy. Can't do that. But even without those turnovers, it's really hard to like have a complete offense if you're averaging 5 yards a pass.
Per attempt.
Yeah, per attempt. That's not even per completion.
I mean, this is where it takes me in my mind, is that we are not a good enough offense nor consistent enough offense to consistently drive down the field.
Yeah.
Yeah, we need some shot plays.
Gotta have shot plays. And if you don't have and here's where you start, and this is where I'm going with this, why I said the fans might get happy, is because I actually at this point, and I know this is easier said than done, because I think we paid Cade a lot of money. I actually think, like, why not just put Sullivan in? I don't know if there's a whole lot of, to use the pun, the joke from Brian, what's the downside? Like, we've seen him a couple times on the goal line. He came in for the last 10 minutes of that game, had a nice little scramble.
Shovel pass.
Shovel pass to Estrenga in the one game.
I get that. But at the same time, kind of what you're going along with your story, like, the Marshalltown Bobcats weren't going to completely reorganize their team based off that one outing against the Iowa Cubs.
No.
You know, this is still a team that, as we look at the rest of the schedule, can beat everyone else on the schedule.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
We're favored versus Washington this week. You know, we go to Michigan State. Like,
oh, I absolutely.
What we played in the first five games of, you know, the style of play and how well we played can easily, not easily, but it can win the next 6 to 7 games.
Yeah, and you're basically saying what nobody wants to hear, Kev, but what you're saying is like,
it's like, hey, we play good enough to win 10 out of 12 games, but our style of play is never going to beat.
You just have to be okay with not beating the top five teams, because you're just not good enough. And people don't like hearing that. They want to be able to at least compete in those games. And I do too. But this takes me back to what I originally said with the money thing, is I think with how NIL is currently, and again, you have to go out and play it. It's not like anybody stepped up on Saturday and said, whoa, 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 whoa. Actually, hold on a second. Turns out Ohio State, they spent $20 million this offseason. Iowa, you spent $2 million. We're going to put 4 points on the board for Iowa to make this fair. This is all about equality. Or equity, maybe. Or I don't know.
Yeah, I get that. Same time.
At what point does the money thing become
a trophy? The one, the team with the higher roster. That's why the Yankees don't win the World Series every year. It's good enough to get them in the playoffs pretty much every year, but they don't win the World Series every year.
It begs the question, though: is there a point where, with the disparity of money so different, and I know it's changing, so actually, I think this argument goes away. Technically, I think collectives can still exist.
There's going to be loopholes around it.
Is there a point where a team like Iowa, who by the way, fire Kirk, move on from Kirk, whatever you want to do to Kirk, which is so many people online are just like, yeah, it's football's college football is past Kirk Ferentz by. That's the best one, Kevin. I fucking love it. College football has passed Kirk Ferentz by. Okay, well, you find me somebody who wants to come to Iowa City, or who is able to come to Iowa City and sustain the type of and create and sustain the type of program in the NIL era that is going to consistently beat Ohio State. It's just not going to happen. Like, there are some
nobody consistently beats Ohio State.
No, there's an infrastructure in place here with tradition and years of how these programs have been built where I don't know if there's a – you could pull Saban off the street, off the game day desk, and he's not going to come in and beat Ohio State consistently with the Iowa Hawkeyes. Like, there are some things that you're going to have to accept being an Iowa Hawkeye fan, and that is, at least for the next few decades, until something major changes college football, Ohio State's going to be a better program than you year in, year out. Michigan, probably going to be a better program than you. They're also going to have way more money. And so that's where the expectations things gets weird, because now you're like, well, we just want them to compete. Okay, well,
same.
Yeah, now there's a gray area because it's not just winning and losing. And so I don't know. It does get to the point where it's like, I think at some point it's hard to expect you to ever win because we played really hard. And maybe if we have an offense, we're tied or up on that game. But Ohio State could have still done that to us if we were up 14-7. And all of a sudden it's 35-14 because over the course of a game, it's like when fucking Dowling played Marshalltown, we could hang with them for a half, but our guys got tired and we didn't have depth. And eventually their athletes were fresh and better and more prepared for a 60-minute ball game. And they just,
you know, I was talking to a friend about a completely different subject, but this just popped in my head. It's like, if you were to play LeBron James one-on-one, first person scores,
you might win.
You get the ball first. You might win 1 out of 20 games if you just, you know, jump back, throw a wild hook shot, and it just goes in. Maybe not 1 out of 20. Maybe 1 out of 100. Right?
Sure, but you got a chance.
But you play to 5, you're gonna win 1 in 1,000,000. You play to 100, you are gonna win 0 games. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. There's time decay.
Yeah. Eventually, the numbers is kind of revert to where they're supposed to.
Yeah. And like, it is really tough as an Iowa, a former Iowa guy. And for those listening, like Iowa fans, to just accept, hey, there's some other factors here that we're up against the dollar signs. We're up against it's tough. And I'm not saying that we're even there yet, but I think it's part of it. I think it's part of it. And maybe that's where you can land on, well, college football's ruined today. Right, maybe. I don't know. But $20 million on a roster?
Yeah, and this is where you have to play money ball almost, and you got to go find the guys who are not being bid millions of dollars out of high school.
Yeah.
And fit them into your system that can somehow scrape wins out against those programs.
Well, I was questioning if I was going to actually bring this up, but I got a DM. Yes,
it's hard. It's not impossible. And obviously we're striving to do it. We're striving to win every game every year. It's hard, right?
I was DM'd by a family member of a current starter on the Hawkeyes. Listener of the show. And they said, I'm not going to reveal anything that would ever reveal who this is, but they said something along the lines of, hey, love the show, yada, yada. You and Kevin Ward know that it's already hard to compete. And with the current, you know, they're claiming that their son, this is a parent of one of the players, was offered $500,000 by multiple other schools this offseason to come and play for them.
And to leave
yeah. Iowa and come play for them. And they turned it down because they've been at Iowa for a few years and they bought in, they've established themselves in Iowa City, like all this stuff, and they turned down that money. But
it's incredibly hard for a college kid to do.
But like,
especially if you're like, I have no idea who this is. You haven't told me about this in private. But especially if you come from a family that needs the money.
Oh, Kevin, I'm gone.
You're impossible. Yeah,
I'm gone.
Yeah.
I mean, no one's offering long snappers.
This is something that you can actually kind of compare to. Like, we had those wins versus a top three Michigan, top three Ohio State team.
Yeah.
Back then, transfer portal wasn't nearly what it was today, and NIL didn't exist. So,
yeah.
Did Ohio State get good recruits every year?
Yes.
Did they miss on some? Yes. They were locked in on those 30 guys a year, whatever.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
This year, every offseason, they can go and fill the gaps in their roster.
And not with guys that they're taking a chance on, guys that are proven.
Guys that are proven, right, exactly. Whereas, you know, 2016, like, hey, we found a couple guys that were really undervalued. We found some two-star, three-star guys that are playing at second-round draft level, you know.
Yep.
That, you know, we got a three-star Noah Fant and a two-star TJ Hockenson.
Sheesh.
That
lucked out there.
First-round draft picks that could, you know, tear up an Ohio State defense back in 2017.
Right. The parent,
you know, in 2024 college football, you just don't know that Ohio State has gaps in their roster that they can't fill with the $20 million that they're paying out, and B, that those two and three star guys that start playing really good football stay at a program that can't afford to pay them that type of money.
Yeah. And the
point, and that's what makes it even harder to compete with those top programs in this era. And we'll see if things change in 2025 once schools start paying the salaries.
I hope they do, because now theoretically, you know, each school now has like the $22 million that they can pay all their programs, right? But I don't know if it will. And it doesn't mean that the collectives won't just double it, because they still have 20 extra million in their collective. The parent was basically getting at, hey, you know, I was not even close. Like, that, you know, because they're
money wise. Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
Money wise. Because I'm assuming, if I'm a player and some SEC school, is what this parent said, comes and says, hey, we'll give you $500,000, $750,000 to come play. Like, that's nothing for us. That's a starter NIL for us. Pay out 22 of those a year. And that ends up being a little less than $20 million. So there you go. There's your money. If you're a player, then you probably go to Tyler Barnes or Brad, and you're like, hey, could I, is there any more? Or like, they're offering me this. Like, I kind of got like some decisions to make here. And they're like, and from what I gather from this person, we're not even close. And this person said they've got a sibling of said player who is either entering college now or did last year or something, and would have loved to come to Iowa. But with what they're giving out, like, there's middle of the road Big 12 schools that are paying 5x what I was willing to. And this is maybe something good to hear for the fans that me and you have tried to preach forever. And a lot of people, like, Iowa doesn't do it the wrong way. Basically what this person said, I think word for word, was until Iowa does pay for play, it's going to be tough to compete because all the other schools are doing it. And KF runs a clean program. Like, that's not what we do here.
But I mean, so, the thing is, pay for play is legal now, right? And
basically,
I guess the rich people of other schools, the rich boosters of other schools, care more about the success of their
you're saying Ashton Kutcher does not care enough about Iowa football to give us all of his money?
Not currently.
Yeah, he should come out with a new Netflix special just to fund the NIL collective.
That'd be great. That'd be great. And that's a lot of so, you know, we're a couple minutes in here. We're going to close down the podcast, and that's a lot of sort of pontification and discussion around, hey, is the money thing becoming a lot here? Is that maybe a potential at least factor in why Iowa, a program that, hey, for the other 10 or 11 games, you can compete. You'll be fine. You can actually win those games, and you have a great chance of winning those games if you just play well. But that one or two teams that you're going to play a year, if you're going to play Oregon or Ohio State, sorry, you're fucked. There's just, it's such a gap between the top and the next that you should not expect to even, you know, maybe even make those close. And then I think about everything that just happened this weekend. Vanderbilt couldn't be stopped against Bama. Tennessee loses to Arkansas. And I start to think, but it's bullshit because anybody can beat anybody. But there are some.
Yes, can. Yes. But.
But.
Over a long enough period of time, talent wins out.
Yeah.
So.
And they've got a lot.
And I think, you know, I don't know if I said this in the podcast, but I was definitely thinking this before the week. It's like, you know, going to this game, like Ohio State probably covers the spread on us 8 times out of 10.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we play them close once and we beat them once. This 2024 Hawkeye team versus the 2024 Buckeye team.
And I would even maybe burn that out to like 20 or 25 games. And I'd say we might beat them 2 out of 25 games, keep it close another 2 out of 25 games, and 21 times they handily take care of us or something. You know, there's a spread in there. But yeah, the gap is large. The gap is large. It is.
Yeah, and, you know, Vanderbilt got Alabama on one of those 10 games. Happens.
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 It was fun to watch. The goalposts going to the river. That was cool.
That was cool. You see they're going to cut it up and auction it off.
I would too.
For the SEC fine.
Yeah, I mean, this is what I told Lauren this morning as she was like, did you see what happened to the goalposts? And I was like, oh yeah, this is the best part about college football is that something so absurd as a goalpost coming down because fans are on it and them walking it through the city is allowed and encouraged because of how big of an upset that was. It would never happen in the NFL because anybody can beat anybody on any given day.
No, I mean, 364 days out of the year, you get arrested for trying to do something like
that. Yeah, it looks like a fucking, like a riot or like a protest, but no, they're getting paraded through the street with like a police escort to make sure no one gets run over because those guys are taking that goalpost to the river, baby.
Oh, I think it was the first time Vanderbilt beat Alabama at Vanderbilt since like the 70s.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's so astronomically not going to happen that when it does, there's no rules.
Yeah,
and that's college football. Ashton Jeanty had 13 carries for another 186 yards and 3 touchdowns. This kid's going to win the Heisman. It's fucking amazing.
He's the most disgusting football player I've ever seen in my life.
And by the way, good for Caleb Johnson. Caleb, who did not play in the last 10 minutes, he could have easily had 100 if they just played him in like the last one or two series. I think they didn't because we don't want to hurt the guy. He almost got his 100, and he had the 1 touchdown, the points that we got for the game. So, you know, still having a great year, and if 86 yards and a touchdown is his worst game this year, likely, Hawkeye fans still have a lot to look forward to. So thank you guys for tuning in. We probably didn't make you feel any better at all. All you know is that I had a 2-home-run game, double dinger game in the AU State Championship in 2006, and it is what it is. Your kid could hit, you know, your guy could hit the ball. Four hitter cleanup. Thanks for listening. Catch all the programming from the walk-ons this week. We'll be back with Grant, me and Grant on Patreon, Lima on Friday, Ike Cold on Wednesday, preview of the Washington game. I think Fox Big Noon Kickoff is coming, so that'll be fun.
And the Hawkeyes are favored. How about that?
And we're favored over a team that was just favored and completed a victory over Michigan. It's just a lot of things happening in college football. We will talk to you all week. We'll see you then. Peace. Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you want more, you can check us out on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube by searching Washed Up Walk-Ons. And if you're interested in supporting the show, head over to patreon.com/washedupwalkons where you can find bonus podcasts, merchandise, and other cool perks. Best part, half of your subscription benefits the kids at UI Children's Hospital. We'll see you next time. Hawks by a million.